It is time for Gaza Corner, and it is just a couple of minutes after 11 o'clock here on KALW San Francisco. Also, Tangents is webcast by our friends in Berlin at multicult.fm. And we do this every Saturday night. Lately, I've been focusing on Gaza, but I don't always do. It really depends what's happening, but the last 7 weeks, really, I've been focusing on Gaza because of the war on Gaza. And the most important news in Israel and Gaza this past week was the agreement last Tuesday of an open-ended ceasefire after 51 days of carnage in Gaza. And what I thought I would do is talk about what's happened and maybe a little bit about what's going forward. These are my thoughts, and I will also let you know when I'm saying something which is based on material that I've read and source it. More or less what I'm about to say is already on the Tangents website at tangents.com. I've put a headline called War on Gaza, Looking Back and Forward, and it's my commentary for tonight. And as always, tragically, the biggest losers are the civilians, and in this case, especially children. These numbers are so horrific that it's easy to be numb to them, but they need to be said. In Gaza, in the last 7 weeks, approximately 2,150 people were killed. 2,150 people killed in 7 weeks. 25% of them were children. The majority of them were civilians. It's hard to know exactly the percentage. Somewhere 75-80% was what I've read. And over 500 of them children. To get a sense of how many children were killed, if you would equate it to the United States, where there are 315 million people living here, 1.8 million people living maybe in the size of Washington, D.C., you know, it's like 139 square miles, Gaza, the Gaza Strip. But if you equate it to that many deaths in the United States, in a seven-week period, you would have 88,000 American children killed. 88,000, more than 88,000, a little bit more. That equates to a little over 500 children killed in Gaza. That is beyond the imagination. It's just, I mean, Israel says in self-defense, yet they killed over 500 children in the name of self-defense. At least 11,000 people were injured in Gaza, including 3,000 children were not only injured, but 1,000 of those 3,000 are paralyzed, likely for the rest of their lives, paralyzed. 1,800 children, 1,800 children orphaned in Gaza over the last 7 weeks. More than 17,000 homes destroyed or badly damaged. And about a third, one out of every three Gazans displaced in the tiny cage known as Gaza, where the borders are sealed. And Gaza's civilian infrastructure completely destroyed. Reconstruction, some analysts say, could take up to 10 years. On the Israeli side, 64 soldiers died, all after the ground invasion. Six civilians, one child died in Israel. And hundreds of families relocated from homes near the Gaza border to safer areas further north. The majority of those stats are from a Guardian UK article that I link on the Tangents webpage. So what did this war on Gaza achieve? Well, the terms of this open-ended ceasefire this past Tuesday appear to be almost identical to what was agreed to at the end of the previous Israeli assault on Gaza in November of 2012. Israel has reportedly agreed to allow humanitarian and construction materials to enter Gaza, and they will extend the permitted fishing zone to 6 miles. It's currently like 3 miles off the coast of Gaza. And the Rafah border crossing, which has nothing to do with Israel, that's the Rafah crossing between Gaza and Egypt, which had been closed, that is supposed to be opened now. Gaza is no friend. I mean, I should say, Egypt is no friend of Hamas, because Sisi, who overthrew the Muslim Brotherhood, has declared them a terrorist group, and Hamas is a offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. But the root cause of the conflict is not addressed. And if it's not addressed, any peace is fragile and can't be sustained for the long term. The root cause is the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza since 1967. That is the root cause. And especially starting in 2006, the inhumane siege and blockade of the Gaza Strip. Inhumane, I say, because Palestinians do not have the basic human rights and freedoms that all people are entitled. Universal rights, freedom of movement. I mean, they have no quality of life. They call it a slow death. That was the case before the last 50 days. As Nathan Thrall said in an op-ed piece in the New York Times a few weeks ago, the article was called How the West Chose War in Gaza. How the West Chose War in Gaza. Quote, Israel is pursuing a return to the status quo ante when Gaza had electricity for barely 8 hours a day, water was undrinkable, sewage was dumped in the sea, fuel shortages caused sanitation plants to shut down, and waste sometimes floated in the streets, unquote. That was the condition before the latest war on Gaza. There is agreement to have the most difficult issues deferred for further talks in a few weeks. Specific demands include a seaport and an airport in Gaza, construction of which were permitted under the 1993 Oslo Accords. Talks will also need to address Israel's insistence on the disarmament of militant groups and the return of the remains of two of its soldiers killed in the fighting. A few weeks ago, I did a Gaza Corner talking about an article written by a rabbi, Henry Siegman, whose father is one of the great famous leaders of the European Zionist movement. Henry Siegman is currently president of the U.S. Middle East Project and formerly a longtime executive director of the American Jewish Congress. He wrote an article in Politico magazine called Israel Provoked This War. He points out this latest war was triggered by Israel's determination to destroy the Palestinian Unity Government that was formed in early June by Fatah, which is the Palestinian Authority, and Hamas. Israel was isolated in this desperate goal to prevent the Unity Government from happening because the United States and the European Union backed the Unity Government. And the Unity Government was committed to honoring all of the conditions imposed by the international community for recognition of its legitimacy. Apparently, Netanyahu's biggest fear is a unified Palestinian entity. Therefore, he manipulated the murder of three young Israeli settlers as a way to whip up domestic and international support for the invasion of Gaza, thinking he would crush Hamas. Hamas would lose support within Gaza, and the Unity Government would be stillborn. Netanyahu miscalculated. Fatah supported Hamas throughout the Israeli assault, and the Unity Government is very much alive. Hamas is weakened, but it arguably enjoys more support in Gaza now than before the war, due to its resistance against one of the world's most lethal military machines. Netanyahu's domestic approval rating, which was 82% when the ground invasion began in mid-July, plummeted to 38%, according to Channel 2 in Israel, the day before the ceasefire was announced, so it's even likely lower now. The next date to focus on is September 15th. According to Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, in an article called "Palestinians Threaten to Turn to ICC if Date Not Set for Return to 1967 Lines," and I link to that article, it does require registration, the Palestinians plan to turn to the United Nations Security Council on September 15th to demand a deadline be set for Israel's withdrawal to 1967 borders, according to senior Fatah official Nabil Shaaf. If the Security Council rejects the initiative, the Palestinians would open their war crimes case against Israel at the International Criminal Court. The Arab League will meet in Cairo September 7th through the 9th to discuss providing Mahmoud Abbas with an Arab umbrella of support. Abbas is already backed in principle by Saudi Arabia and Egypt. And that is on the homepage. What I just read is on the homepage at tangents.com if you'd like to take a look at it. And the articles that I reference are all linked there as well.